Hello, everyone. Welcome to Matt Dory's Excellent Adventure. I'm Matt.
I'm Dory.
Hope you're all thanks and giving and doing so with only the members of your immediate household.
Yep.
Huzzah.
Yep, it'll just be the three of us. Well, yeah. I guess four if you count Bo.
I do count Bo. He's the only other person to eat turkey.
Well, Henry will eat it.
Yeah, that's true. But and I said person. That's... Henry's a baby.
Well, Henry will eat it, and then he'll go, bah, bah, and want to give the rest of it to Bo.
Yes, he will keep asking if he can put the throw the food out of the floor. He loves throwing food on the floor.
He loves feeding Bo. I mean, it's kind of smart when you think about it.
Where is... There it is. I found it. Great job, me. I found Dory's email telling us what's going on with the...
Like, I feel like it's kind of smart on Henry's part.
To throw food?
To, like, give so much food to Bo, because then Bo likes him.
That's true. There are better ways to go about it. You know, you just be nice.
Well, I think Henry is
actually...
Although
Bo really responds to cheese, so...
Yeah. I think Henry is pretty nice to him.
Yes. I think as far as babies and dogs are concerned, absolutely.
But I think, like, the extra food that Henry gives him does not hurt.
That's true.
You know?
So Henry's door had this crack underneath it, you know, because at some point, I'm guessing the house had carpeting. You know, you lose the carpeting, all of a sudden, space.
Your doors are too short.
You have a giant space at your door. So a while ago, I put in a...
Bo, please do not do this.
Put like a mud flat. What's Bo doing, everyone? He's crawling into as many cables as he can. And now Dory's taking a microphone off.
No, I'm not going to do this.
We are... Not in any shape to be podcasting weekly, everyone. This is a disaster. Bo, I don't know why you're in here.
I'm going to put you in the house, Bo.
Crack the door and let him in and out if he wants. He's a wandering soul. And then inevitably in 12 to 15 minutes when he starts barking maniacally at, I don't know, a leaf.
Go. Go. Come on.
You don't have to tell him to go. Just now that he has the option.
Ay, ay, ay.
Anyway, Henry had a thing on his door, so I put a, what do you call it? A little flap gap thing, a gap stopper kind of thing. And he did not care for it.
It blocked all the light.
It blocked all the light. And, I mean, my goal was to block the sound, because I didn't want him to be annoyed by us or hear us and not want to go to sleep. But as we could tell by his positioning in his crib, which is flat down, head to the left, looking towards that crack in the door, he really kept up to date on what was happening in the house.
He really did.
Via that crack.
I hadn't quite realized the extent to which he was doing that.
Well, I noticed it. I noticed that he always was looking there and always was like aware of it. I knew he knew when people walked by.
Yeah.
But when it was pitch black, he was not having it.
No, he was very upset.
He was maniacal in his crying. What else happened this week? So today I took a razor blade and gave him a little sliver of a crack.
Yeah, but last night you propped it up with like a spatula.
I shoved two spatulas under the door, which after I did that, he
stopped crying.
He was chill.
Yeah, he just needs that little bit of light.
So then today I took a quarter inch off of it with a razor blade. Solve that problem. Friday night, I was home early. We wrapped shooting Goldberg's at lunch. So I stayed. I had free lunch at work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then went home. And because I was home early, when we put Henry to bed, Dory and I were standing in the kitchen chit-chatting, and he was crying, and then I heard a little gurgle, and I was like, I think he just threw up. And then Dory's like, well, go check. And I was like, okay, because he was crying like a crazy baby. And I opened the door, and he had just vomited everything onto his bed.
Yeah.
And I was so, I was very, I had my ears out.
You did.
It was like your, you know, that dad sense people say they have.
You had it.
I had it. And I was like, this kid definitely puked. So we got, I picked him up. I got puke all over me.
Mm-hmm.
We changed him. Dory quickly changed the sheets. And then we did a little repeat bath time. And
well, we didn't give him another bath.
No, we did a repeat bath time in of the, I guess, repeat bedtime.
Yeah.
We read him the same exact books.
Yes.
In new pajamas.
Yes.
And he was delighted.
Yes.
And then he went to bed.
Yes.
Happily.
That is true. That all happened.
And then
he was fine.
Yeah, he was totally fine. Like, he was happy. I mean, look, I think he was just crying because he's like, who wants to sleep in their own pieces of strawberries?
Of course. Of course. I mean, he gets really upset when he pukes, understandably.
Doesn't happen that much.
No, but it happened.
Recently, it's been like.
Yeah, it happened in the last week.
He really
another
likes,
time.
He likes to really likes to move about in a rapid fashion, which I think can't be good for his tummy. Like, especially, like, think about, like, eating a bunch and then having a fuck ton of milk.
Yeah, and he also likes to go upside down.
He likes to go upside down. He likes to pretend to fall.
Yeah.
He loves a good pratfall. Let's see. What else happened this week? Just trying to catch everybody up.
Well, we ordered Thanksgiving from a local caterer who's doing, like, Thanksgiving meals because I didn't want Matt to have to cook a whole turkey and do the whole thing. And, like,
I mean, I'm glad I don't have to do it. I'll probably miss it a little bit. And I did like the idea of, like, being occupied, but I also,
it's such an undertaking.
It really is, especially if there's only three of us.
Yeah, and one of us doesn't eat meat.
Yeah.
And one of us is a baby.
Yeah. So again, Thanksgiving will be prepared elsewhere by someone else.
We could make a pie together.
I'd rather not make a pie. I'm not a sweets maker. You're the sweets maker.
Okay, maybe I'll make a pie on Thanksgiving.
I'm more of the savory guy.
Mm-hmm. But you like cake.
Cake's the best. I don't make it.
That's true.
I mean, I made that toasty cake.
Which came out great.
Yeah. It's also like the most sugar I've ever seen go into anything in my life.
It was very sweet.
It was a great cake, though.
It was a very good cake.
I would have eaten the whole thing. Mm. Thank God we brought it to Kate's.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, someone in one of my like local LA mom groups, there have been a few posts of like, what's everyone doing for Thanksgiving? Because a lot of people are having Thanksgiving at their houses like for the first time because people are used to going to family. And people are like, what am I doing? Also, it's like only us, you know, three or four people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like ordering in, like getting like Whole Foods or whatever. And someone was like, oh, this is like a woman-owned catering company based here, and she is doing Thanksgiving, and you can get it delivered. And I was like, great.
One of the crew guys is doing with his family, like a little turkey burger cookout.
Oh, that's cute.
Right?
That's a really cute thing.
And also, like, much harder to fuck up if you're out there and you're thinking of, like, what the hell am I going to do? There's only
two
or one person.
Yes.
Why not do a turkey burger with the fixins on the burger?
That's a really good idea, actually. I love that. We do have to get you your cranberry sauce, though.
I'll need a can of cranberry.
Yeah.
I'll have to somehow figure out how to get that.
Yeah.
I'll have to hazmat up.
Yeah.
And then rappel from a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully pay for it somehow.
Yeah.
Or I could like Postmate one can of cranberry from something somewhere.
I'm sure stranger things have happened.
No doubt. So, yeah. And then if you're wondering what's like for me, we're off this week, but I'm testing on Wednesday. And then I'm testing again on Sunday. And then obviously I'll test again on Monday when we go back to work.
You know, here's the thing that happened this week. Mm. I took Henry to his first dentist appointment.
Oh.
Yep.
That's true. You did say that.
I did do that.
He came back with some Paw Patrol toothpaste.
Yep. I'm not sure if I love this dentist, I'll be honest.
I don't know how, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? It's like...
I know.
He's a baby.
I know.
Whatever.
He said his teeth look good.
Okay.
Which I was like, great.
You got the validation that you needed from
him. I did, exactly. But that still didn't make me like be like, I love you, dentist. I was sort of like, he brushed his teeth, then he put fluoride on it, and then that was it. The whole appointment took like less than 10 minutes.
I said 12 to 15 minutes.
It was less.
About 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you hear Bo in the background, everybody?
That's Bo. And wait, there's something else I was going to say about the dentist, and now I forget.
You're not sure if you like them. You liked his teeth.
Thumbs up on the teeth work.
Paw Patrol.
Oh, now I remember.
Fluoride.
No, when we were driving home, we drove past a couple of urgent cares, and there were lines like down the block to get COVID tests. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, everyone's getting COVID tests before they freaking like leave town.
Oh, for sure.
Because this is their, they think that this like makes it safe.
Yeah. The people getting the COVID test so that they can then go party.
I was also thinking that like, this has got to be such a boon for urgent cares. They've never been so busy with this COVID testing.
Yeah, but I will say the profit margin is not on the test is not huge.
Really?
No, it's like, I think the test costs, I mean, depending on where you go, the tests, because I know I'm friends with a doctor who has his own.
He does COVID.
I
mean,
it's almost it's a urgent care up in the valley, but I think he pays $60 for the tests, and he charges $64.
Oh, he charges way too little. Everywhere else charges $125.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't be friends with a terrible doctor.
No. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, when
so
this is...
So, I guess the profit margin is 100% on those. So yeah. Great job.
Well, and I was also thinking, like, when this is all over, these urgent cares are going to just go back to normal. Hope they're saving their money.
Yeah, I mean, it's... But, again, it's going to be a couple years.
Yeah.
Of this...
I know.
Sort of situation we're in.
But they say that the first doses of the vaccine are going to be in, like, mid-December.
Well, if I'm confident in anything... It's our federal government currently being able to distribute effectively vaccines on a large scale. So don't hold my breath. I just held my breath. I'm sorry, everybody. I've thought of that too. I thought of like we have on our set, you know, there's two COVID officers, safety officers. We get tested three tests a week. People,
there's like a whole COVID industry.
There is a COVID industry. It's very interesting. It's like if you were, you know, like these places like Real Health, like essentially places that would just send us, you know, we'd have our on-set medic when we were on location. They'd come from one of these companies. And now these companies have like almost permanent spots on the lot.
Yeah.
Where they're testing. And this is like large scale testing. I mean, production's like, you know, 150, 200 people.
Yeah.
And an entire floor and a half of the parking garage is taken up by testing. Wow.
Because each show has their own like station?
No, there's like three vendors and shows use whichever vendor they want to be using.
Oh, I see.
You know? So it's interesting to see.
Well, it's also interesting to see like what you can actually accomplish with like money and competent people in charge.
Yes, and also what you can get done with the proper safety measures and equipment in place.
Yeah. Like if the public schools had the money and the logistical capacity of film production, kids would be back in school.
Oh, for sure. If it was down to just masks, socially distant, once a week testing, it'd be no problem. Honestly. It's really interesting. Like the fact that we haven't had like an outbreak of anything.
Yeah. Because it works.
Yeah. And also like, I mean, we are we're pretty close to each other sometimes. We have to be, you know, and we're not, we're, if we're, if the actors are on set and they're not wearing a mask, we have to wear face shields.
Mm.
And that's for us.
Mm-hmm.
Like for their droplets not to get in our eyes.
Right.
But otherwise, it's pretty much just, you know, put a face mask on.
So actually, the actors are at the highest risk because they're around each other with no protection.
Correct. Yeah. But with everybody else doing their part,
right,
it seems to work out.
It's funny how if everyone does their part,
yeah. I hope you all do your parts.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone. If you want to email the show, you could do so. DoryMatt@gmail.com or BattandDory@gmail.com. You can go ahead and find us on Facebook. There's a Facebook group there. Just search for Excellent Adventure. You'll find it. There's an offshoot if you have gotten pregnant with IVF or you're expecting or you've had the baby. There's an offshoot group for that.
It's called Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure, Pregnancy and Children.
Yes. And you can also telephone us, 413-461-BABY. Or if you feel like it, just record a voice memo and email it on over.
I do want to say that Kate has started getting text messages on the Google Voice number for Forever 35. You can text the number too.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just saying, if you guys want to text us at 413-461-BABY, you can do that too.
Oh, I thought she was like getting it onto her own her phone, like constant texts.
She might have it routed to her phone. I don't know how she has it set up. But I don't have it routed to my phone.
Nor do you know how to set it up.
No, it's all it's like
have
it's,
you tried? Have you sent a text, a test text?
There have been a few times that people have sent texts, like just to send texts to us, and I've gotten them.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's another option for
you. I've also gotten a wrong number text where someone put me on a group chat with an HR team and security agents for some company.
Cool. You should have stayed on there.
It was like, all company meeting concluded. Crowd is breaking up.
Nice.
I was like, for a security team, you put the wrong number on the text chain.
Look, this all company first half of the show is concluded.
All right.
And we are breaking this podcast up. Until further notice, which should be in probably like a minute and a half. See you then. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are you ready to get active? Well, think Bombas. The better basics that take sweat wicking, blister preventing, friction-free movement seriously. Look, they finally admitted it. It's in the ad copy. Golfing is among the activities that Bombas is proud to be a part of. And nearly every time I golf, Bombas socks are a part of my golf game. In fact,
same today, for tennis. Same for tennis, oh, Matt.
I had to wear the high ones today because it was 37 degrees.
Wow. I bet you loved those soft, breathable materials.
I loved literally everything about them, including their fun bluish-green color. Look, nice. I've been talking about Bombas forever, guys. Socks, underwear, t-shirts are the number one, two, and three most requested items in homeless shelters. And that's why for every comfy item you purchase, Bombas donates another comfy item to someone experiencing homelessness. Performance socks are made with technically advanced features like proprietary hex tech. Oh, that makes sense now that the hex is stitched in there. It incorporates sweat wicking.
The light bulb's going off.
Supportive strategic zone cushioning, built-in ventilation to increase airflow. Bombas are a gym bag staple that are made to last and a golf bag staple. And if they experience any wear or tear, Bombas will replace them for life. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Hold the phone.
Wow.
But I was like, I got to get some socks replaced. And then I realized none of them are in need of replacement. Their performance socks are very colorful and comfortable. And you want to wear them even when you're not working out or hitting the links. No matter how you like to get active, Bombas has something for you. Gripper socks to help you stay balanced in Pilates and bar. Or for Dory's dad, whose favorite thing is socks that have grippers on the bottom. Left, right foot contoured running socks give you a perfect fit that won't slide in your shoe. Merino wool socks keep you comfy and supported all day while on the course, baby. Bombas has a 100% happiness guarantee. That means you're covered for life. Reach out anytime. Their happiness team will help facilitate easy returns, exchanges, or replacements. Go to bombas.com/adventure. Use the code adventure for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/adventure and use the code adventure at checkout. All right, we're back. Bo has returned to the office.
He has.
His nose is cold. So who knows what he's been up to?
Hunting. All right. We are going to kick things off.
Kick it.
With a voice memo.
Okay.
Last week.
That means I'll hit this button and then you'll play it when you want to.
Last week we had a listener write in who had a conundrum about extra embryos. Do you recall that?
I do, of course.
Yeah. Okay, so Meredith responded. Here we go.
Hi, this is Meredith calling from Cleveland. My husband is Alec that always calls.
Alec Meredith and Fletcher
about Vegas.
I do.
I am a long time listener, first time caller.
You're the longest.
But I had to pause the pod. I think about doing this all the time, but like this time I really had to do it. I had to pause the pod. I just listened to the caller or the email, the woman who is considering the third embryo and what to do with it because she thinks that she's done with her family. And I just have to say, I think about this on a constant basis. We have a 2.5-year-old science baby and a 4-month-old girl. And when we started IVF, we had unexplained infertility. So we kind of approached IVF the most, I think, altruistic way possible. You know, let's do this as sort of quote unquote naturally as possible. We didn't genetic test. And we said that we would always go back for the embryos in storage. But fast forward to reality, our first cycle, we had 3 embryos. The first was a failed fresh transfer. The second is our 2.5-year-old son, Fletcher. The third was destroyed in one of the freezer malfunctions that everyone heard about on the news, which was obviously devastating. And we didn't have any, obviously, they were all destroyed, so we didn't have any other embryos. We had one of those miracle pregnancies right before we were about to start IVF again, where we got pregnant naturally. When we were finally allowing ourselves to be excited about it, we thought this is perfect. This is like gonna give us our 2 kids, and we don't have to go through IVF again and have to make that horrible decision of what to do with the extra embryos. We ended up miscarrying that pregnancy on a family vacation to Europe. So we went ahead with the second round of IVF, and we have our on our first frozen transfer, we got pregnant successfully with our 4-month-old girl, Florence, and we have 3 embryos left, and I don't want to leave them in there indefinitely. But as we've all heard on the podcast, it sounds like donating to science is not really an option at the moment. And I personally could not imagine donating the embryos to someone else, just because I feel like our babies would be out there somewhere. So I feel like I can't be pregnant again. I mean, I know I'm in the thick of it with a 4-month-old and a 2.5-year-old, but I feel like I can't be pregnant again. And I just feel like we had 2 C-sections. I feel like I can't have a third. But I don't, I just feel like I look at my daughter and I look at my son and I'm just like, what if we chose other embryos? What if the doctors chose other embryos and these weren't our kids and they were actually in the freezer and the other, you know, you just always wonder what those babies are going to be like. So I, just wanted to say that I really identify with the feelings of being so grateful that we have these 2 babies. But also constantly think of the 3 embryos. We have decent success with frozen transfers. So there's no guarantee that the 3 would be 3 additional kids, but it feels like we would, it feels like they do pretty well. So it's scary to think about if we went back for all 3 of them, would we have 5 kids? I can't have 5 kids.
No.
So I am not calling for advice. I am just saying that this concept consumes me, and I am here for it, that emailer, and would love to hear. This is probably like a whole, like, I'm sure you're getting flooded by women and men who are calling in about this, because it's the, like, IVF is a, it's a beautiful solution, but then there's like a new problem that comes with it. So I'm sure a lot of people struggle with this. But this is, the community that you guys have created has been so helpful that we can kind of air these, feelings and thoughts. We are in 3,000 square feet in Cleveland. Finally. With my husband and 2 beautiful science babies.
Meaning we finally get the information.
A cat, not like your dog. Got a little freewheeling with her bowel movements. So living in the basement. Thank you guys for everything. You're awesome. Not sure what I would do without this podcast. That made even our IVF journey possible. Okay, thanks.
That is very kind, too kind even. Also, we have a human baby who's kind of like that cat.
Did poop a lot today.
Yeah, he did. I don't know that I could even put myself in that headspace of like, what would I do if we had a bunch of healthy or PGS tested normal embryos lying around?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, especially when you think about Henry was on ice for 1.5 years.
2 years.
2 years. Ugh, no wonder he's the size of a 3-year-old. But yeah, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I appreciate this voicemail.
I like a good voicemail that just wants to say their truth.
Yes. I also like a voice memo because the quality is really great.
Voice memos are the way to go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. All right. This next email is from Emma. Hello, Dory, Matt, Henry, and Beau. Thank you for all that you do. I'm a Forever 35 crossover listener, although I originally came to you through Dory's first book, which I read ages before I ever listened to anything y'all have produced. I can't wait for the new one, as I'm a fellow proud late bloomer in every way. Why rush any of it when each life stage is so sweet? As my husband would so wisely say, we have time. I'm writing because I just received a negative result on my blood test after a might as well try it IUI, and we're gearing up to start IVF. I have a pretty complicated gynecological history with a couple of endometriosis and tubal issue surgeries. The first when I was pretty young and still single. Signing all of the pre-op consent forms prepared me that infertility would probably be in my future, but that's obviously different than the reality of knowing it is time for IVF. Even though we've anticipated this was coming, we sort of dragged our feet for a few years on getting to the point of meeting with an RE. There are a number of reasons that boil down to we were and are having a great time and can't find it in ourselves to feel pressured, see also late blooming. It is not lost on me that I'm lucky to not feel super anxious or stressed and haven't been very emotional so far. I attribute this in part to being similar to Dory in that I like to emotionally prepare for the worst so I can be pleasantly surprised rather than, I don't know, crushed when things don't pan out.
You do that?
Yeah.
I invented that.
Wow.
Like, you can't just come onto this podcast and take my thing.
However, my darling husband will shout, be positive.
I do that too to you.
Yep.
To you.
Mm-hmm.
Not to myself.
No, to me. Kind of like telling someone to calm down, isn't it? If I express my desire to manage my expectations. So I find myself faking positivity to him and then talking myself down from excitement in my head. I don't think my husband is wrong to believe in the power of positive thinking. And I do find myself feeling more hopeful about IVF since, according to my RE, I'm a good candidate. I'm 35. Most of my issues are tubal. And so bypassing those should give us a better shot in theory. My question after that long-winded intro is this: how do I balance having a positive outlook without breaking my heart when things go south? After listening to y'all, I feel like I'm prepared that a lot can go wrong, and I want to balance that awareness with carrying the emotional weight of potential issues that might not pertain to me. Is there really a way to plan for the worst but hope for the best, or is this just what we tell ourselves we're doing, whether or not we're negatively or positively minded? Anyone out there have a successful endometriosis / tubal issue IVF experience or a bad one?
I have to think that yes.
I'm not really sure which itch I want to scratch. Not on Facebook, so I won't be checking in with your group, as delightful as I'm sure the eggheads are. Thank you for your insight and my best to all the Shafriras. Love, Emma. 2,400-ish square feet in Dallas with one husband, one glass door between our offices, and one 25-pound, 7-year-old street dog who always wants to be in the office where she is not. And she attached a picture.
I see the picture.
Of her very cute doggy.
That is just like a shrunken down bowhead.
Yeah. Peering through the window.
You know, I have an answer for this. Are you ready? I hope you're all listening. I think the best way, when going through IVF, the best way to deal with what may or may not happen when you begin the process is to have a plan for each scenario. That way, you're not disappointed and caught off guard. You have something like when Dory and I did the Henry transfer, our plan was to try that. And that was sort of a Hail Mary at CFP. And then we would move on to a different infertility place, CCRM. So having that plan in place, you can allow yourself to emotionally go through what you have to go through. But intellectually, you're already ready for the next thing. You don't have to jump in your brain. You've already done that. So you get to, you can feel whatever you need to feel. And then you have the plan. And also like the plan of like, if this works, okay, then what? And if this doesn't work, then what? What are my options? Having that, I think, ready will allow someone like yourself who plans for the worst but hopes for the best to get through it in a more sane manner.
I have to say, I think that is truly excellent advice.
That's what I'm here for sometimes.
I agree with everything Matt said. The only other thing I would add...
Whoa!
I do.
I thought I gave perfect advice. Now there's more.
Well...
Just kidding. Of course there's
more. Your question was, how do I balance having a positive outlook without breaking my heart when things go south? I think you just have to come to terms with the fact that your heart might be broken.
Yes. And I think allow it to be broken.
Yeah.
by having that plan.
Yes. So that's all. That's all I would add.
Have with your husband too.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I definitely want this to work. This is going to be great when it does. Let's pretend it doesn't. Let's talk about what we would do if that were the case. Let's have that plan. And I would even include your RE or your IVF doctor in that discussion.
That's a really good idea. It's almost like we've been dealing with infertility for like 5 years.
So weird.
All right.
I'm an infertile genius. Welcome to the Apple Store. I'm an infertile genius.
This is from Julia. Hi, Matt and Dory. Thanks so much for your podcast. I've been listening for a few years after hearing Matt on Gilmore Guys. I feel like there could be a whole like subgroup of eggheads who found us through Gilmore Guys.
I think there is. I think it's probably like 20% of our audience.
Literally. Yeah. And have so enjoyed learning more about the IVF process and hearing your banter. All right. She has two questions. Mm-hmm. One, I know you've decided to keep third party opinions out of your decision about a second child, which makes total sense. I was wondering if you have a timeline in your mind on when you would need to make the decision. Two, I'm so late to the party, but I just finished Startup a Novel. Great job, Dory. It was such a fun read. I wanted more when it ended, though. Any Everyone chance did. You will do a sequel or continue the character's stories in another book? Hope you are both doing well and staying safe. Best, Julia, in about 800 square feet in Washington, D.C. with a husband and a free non-science two-year-old. Oh, Beau tried to get on the chair, but it moved. It swivels. And
I'll help him out.
He got very nervous about that. Well, I'll respond to the startup question first. First of all, thank you. That's really kind of you to say and very validating when someone not only like loves your book, but also like wants to be in the world more. That's just really, as an author, that's really nice to hear. You know, you're not the first person to ask this. I have thought about this. I think what happened was after Startup came out, we were really in the thick of IVF stuff. And it was just really hard for me to like wrap my head around the idea of writing another novel. And then I got pregnant and I had Henry and then I sold a memoir. And so that's been kind of occupying me for the last couple, like year and a half. But, you know, I think after this book is done, I mean, anything could happen. I could decide never to write a book again. I could decide to write another novel. I could, I don't know.
That was the thing about your novel, though. It was page turner, deliberately.
Yes.
So even at the end, it was a page turner.
Yes.
Where you're like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
I turned the page.
And actually, in my memoir, I talk a little bit about how I kind of taught myself to write a page turner.
You would have done a great job of writing Star Trek Picard.
Oh, thank you.
You would have been bad at television, but great at writing Star Trek Picard.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's such a non-compliment.
No, it is, because Michael Chabon's a brilliant writer.
Oh, I see.
And he was the showrunner of Picard.
Right.
And but every episode ended like it was a chapter.
But he's also a lifelong sci-fi and Star Trek fan.
Is he?
Yeah, he is. I went to his home office. It's like lined with old sci-fi books. Like he's always been very into sci-fi.
Look.
And this was way before he, you know, Star Trek
sure.
was yeah. on the horizon.
Yeah.
All right. First question, do we have a timeline in our minds on when we would need to make the decision?
Before Henry gets to kindergarten, because that's too late to space children. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to make the decision before that because I'll be way too old by the time Henry goes to kindergarten.
Doesn't mean we can't make it happen.
Okay.
I don't know if you watch television, but there's always success stories of moms carrying daughters' babies. What?
All right. Let's take another break.
Okay, we'll be right back.
All right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we're back.
We are back.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to kick off this
update. Bo did not care for the Eames chair.
No.
Tried to get him on it, and he got on it and did a full 180.
Like turn?
He 180'd and just stepped back out.
I think it's like too scary for him.
I put it in the corner. I showed him how it moves. He seemed like he got on.
Yeah, but I think the fact that it moves is like too scary for him. All right, we are going to hear voicemail.
Let's.
Hi, Matt, Dory, Bo, and Henry. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Like, long-time listener. I think I started listening my senior year of college in 2017 while I was working on my thesis. I was a painting major, so I had a lot of time to listen to podcasts. I'm calling with... Is it unsolicited advice? Maybe. Dory, recently on Instagram, you did Ask Me Anything, which I love. I love parenting Ask Me Anything. I'm a nanny. I kind of marinate in all things kid. And I loved getting to see a little bit of insight into what your parenting looks like with Henry. Someone asked about the pickler that Henry has and ask if he took to it right away. And you said, why, yes, he did take to it right away. And that you would give this person and their child like another month, give it another month, and if the child still isn't interested in it, sell it on Facebook Marketplace. But I have a completely different thought. Don't sell it on Facebook Marketplace after a month, and also don't wait another month. Put it away instead for like a month or three. If you have a child who isn't interested in something that's totally developmentally like appropriate for them to be interested in, instead of getting rid of it, take it away and give them time to breathe. And before you bring it out again, maybe like a week before, show them a video of kids using the pickler. Like, I think there are ones in Dory's highlights of Henry using the pickler. So show your child that and then bring it out and then see what happens. And then if there's no interest, proceed from there. I think this is really relevant advice for me in life right now, especially during the pandemic, with things that seem appropriate to me that I have no interest in. And just put it away for a little bit and come back to it. See how it is. And this is really effective with toddlers, too. My name's Alex. I use they, them pronouns. I live in Portland, Maine, in a house that I don't know the square footage of, but my room is very small, with three roommates and one cat. I love y'all so much. Bye.
Thank you.
That's great advice.
Look, they make an interesting point in the sense of like, you could all of a sudden, it's like a whole new thing.
Totally.
Months later.
Totally. And I should have thought of that because that is like a known strategy.
Well, let me just sidestep the acknowledgement of the great advice given and come at it from a different angle.
I'm all yours.
I mean, who has the space to keep an unused pickler triangle around?
Well, ours folds.
It does, but it's enormous.
It is big. It is big. That's a fair point.
I think that is wise.
Yeah.
For instance, like when we had Henry's infant toys out the other day.
Yes, he was all about them.
He was like, "This is my shit."
And it was like rattles and
chewable broccoli, like this foam broccoli thing.
We'd put them. I'd ask Holly to go through his toys and like bag up the stuff that he's kind of outgrown, and so she had they were out in a bag, and he started going through them, and he was like, "Oh, these toys are amazing!
These are so much better than all other toys." Finally, I'm old enough for these.
That was really funny. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for calling in.
But that's just a little example of what can happen when you don't. I mean, not around these toys for a couple months.
That's true. All right. This next email is from Shannon. Why don't you read this one?
Okay. Where'd it go?
I think you scrolled past it.
Where'd it go?
Down, down, down.
Oh, sure.
There.
Hi, Matt and Dory. I've been listening since the very beginning of the podcast. Came over from Nerdist, and while I'm not thinking about having any children anytime soon, I've enjoyed listening to every week and learning about different people's excellent adventures. As a listener on the sidelines, I haven't had any reason to write into the pod until now. And I'm only mostly embarrassed that this is why I'm writing in. There was recently talk of the phenomenon of having explosive diarrhea from the smell, from a smell, and I immediately thought of the Mariko Aoki phenomenon, which is having to poop when you're in a bookstore. As wild as this sounds, this has happened to me on more than a few occasions. Not explosive diarrhea, just a regular poop. I don't quite understand it, but I guess being surrounded by words really gets my insides going. Who knows? I've included a wiki link and explanation below. Love the pod. Shannon, 855 square feet in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Just her and a lot of books. Wow, she's going to be on a regular move then.
She's very regular.
The Mariko Aoki phenomenon is the Japanese expression referring to the urge to defecate that is suddenly felt after entering a bookstore. So this is like, you know, the Germans have a word for schadenfreude, and the Japanese have a word for having to shit when you go into a bookstore. The phenomenon name derives from the name of a woman who mentioned the phenomenon in a magazine article in 1985. According to Japanese social psychologist Shozo Shibuya, the specific cause that triggers a defecation urge in bookstores is not yet clearly understood as of 2014. There are also some who are skeptical about whether such a particular phenomenon really exists at all, and it is sometimes discussed as a type of an urban myth.
Wow.
But this, someone wrote in last week about this happening in bookstores, used bookstore, book and record stores, correct?
Yes.
We have got to get to the bottom of this poop ring.
I mean, the fact that it is a phenomenon.
Yes.
Is fascinating.
I mean, I'd love to be Mariki Aoki.
Okay.
And have it this says, phenomenon named after
she wrote herself. An essay in a book magazine in Japan, and she related how she came to the realization that for some years, walking around a bookstore inevitably made her want to go to the restroom, and the editors of the magazine received reports of other readers who had similar experiences and named it the Mariko Aoki phenomenon. Oh, the association with reading on the toilet at home. They say it could be that's a hypothesis of why that happens.
Interesting. Interesting.
Wow.
This was not a Mythbusters. They didn't do Mythbusters on this.
There should be a Mythbusters. Wow. This is, oh wait, there were television programs, well, only in Japan, that tried to verify the phenomenon. This is fascinating.
A consensus of opinion has yet to be reached. The author, Junichiro Yami, has commented that at first glance, there appears to be no common thread. In a manner akin to the hypothetical concept of the flap of a butterfly's wing in Brazil setting off a tornado in Texas. To date, there has been little attempt to scientifically validate the phenomenon, such as a state of observation currently does not extend much beyond experts and thinkers asserting their own theories among each other. Theories that are based in subjective judgment. So here's what I'd like. Anyone out there who might be trying to get a doctorate, I smell a thesis.
It's a pretty stinky thesis.
So that's very interesting. That is a good email if I ever saw or heard one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shannon. All right. We've reached the bake-off portion of the podcast. This is from Leah. Hi, Dory.
What a week.
What a week. Hi, Dory, Matt, Henry, and Beau. I just watched the most recent episode of Bake Off and need to vent. Are you fucking kidding me? I cannot believe who's kicked off and who made it to the final. I've rarely been so mad at Paul and Prue. Anyway, on to my real question. This is also the darts portion of the podcast.
Oh, this is my favorite portion.
Go ahead. Your talk of the dartboard has intrigued me. I'm thinking of getting my husband one for Christmas, as it's something we can do for an at-home pandemic date night. Since Matt has bought all of the accessories, which ones are essential? Also, do you guys have any other ideas for things like this we can do together that I could gift him? We have three small children who we are both at home with all day, every day. And my husband is working from home. I'm hoping to find fun things we can do together after bedtime or on the weekends. Thanks, Leah. She's in a 2,000 square foot home and a 400 square foot sunroom in Simi Valley. And she has approximately 2 hot dogs a year and whatever corn dogs my kids don't finish eating at lunchtime.
So, Leah, yeah, let's talk about dartboards, finally. I've done the research. I've discovered the best dartboard easily available to us here in the States is the Winmao Blade 5 Dual Core.
Okay.
Now, what's a Blade 5? Well, let me tell you, no staples. Very thin border between scoring zones, which means reduced bounce outs.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. It's what all the tournaments are using. I mean, not the WinMao. I think the PDC
okay.
is their Unicorn branded, which I can't find out here. Unicorn dart comp. Anyway, very similar material. And I would say that you'll need that, a good board, a surround for the board to protect the wall. I have the Viper Defender. You could play with the regular lighting in your house, no problem. I recently got a light, an LED light that surrounds the board entirely. The other thing I would say is a decent set of darts. Now you can start with brass. But if you get something like 80% tungsten, what that means is, it's denser than brass, so you can have a thinner dart that weighs the same. And what does that mean? Well, it means it leaves you more room in the scoring area to throw other darts in it. That's right. Here's some dart YouTube channels I would recommend. Edgar TV, World Rank 64. Matthew Edgar, he's 3 years younger than me, and he has a YouTube channel, and it's pretty enjoyable. Another dart channel I like is called Dart Class, which is this new dad in his basement teaching you darts and checking out different equipment and stuff like that. Those two channels will get you pretty set. Thanks, everybody. It was a good dark corner.
Well, we have more in the dark corner.
I can't believe it. This is exciting news.
This is from Emily. Hi, Matt and Dory. I didn't get a chance to write in last week, but after hearing that no one else did, I figured that I must. Darts.
Yeah.
A bunch of my friends and I are in a gay darts league here in DC. Well, we were in pre-COVID times. Uh-huh. Yes, that is a random thing, but it's actually incredibly popular. You don't have to read this part.
We're going to.
But I thought Matt might want to know how the league is set up. Each team has 2 to 6 players. Teams alternate turns, and players within each team rotate each turn. We work with a bar, setting up about 6 dartboards. The league brings their own boards and mats. Mm-hmm. Each team plays 1 game per week, and games last 35 minutes with specific rules regarding ties if time runs out.
Ah.
I've never heard of the game you guys play, but we play cricket.
That's so funny. Because when you watch these UK YouTube channels and they talk about cricket, they're like, this is a very popular game in the US, but rarely does anyone play it in the UK.
Oh, that's so funny. Cricket is what you see on boards and bars with numbers 15 to 20 and plus B down a line in the middle and 2 columns on each side. On the dartboard.
There's always usually a cricket scoring board.
In each column closest to the center, you mark if/when you hit and or close out one of those numbers. To close out, you have to hit the number 3 times, and you typically see a circled X indicating that it's closed. If you close out a number before your opponent, you can continue to hit that number to gain points and mark how many times you hit that number or the points accumulated in the outside columns. Each time you hit a number that you closed and your opponent has not, you get the number of points that you hit. There are lots of apps that you can download to keep track of scoring for you. Darts gear. Mm-hmm. I'm not as obsessive as others. I have some nice-ish darts that I like to use, and my wife and I got a board during shutdown that we have yet to use, but I have several friends who have fancy gear, and I've gotten a lot more since shutdown. My friends recommend getting a floor mat. It provides some cushioning.
Seen them. I've seen the dart mats.
Plus the line on the floor, plus prevents darts that fall out of the board from messing up your floor.
That's the Aki, honey.
If you have
O-C-H-E. The dart Aki.
Okay. Yeah. If you have an issue with flights falling off, one of my friends got this fancy hole punch thing that helps keep your flight attached.
Girl, I got a hole punch. I got a flight punch. Where is it? Somewhere.
Finally,
I would
recommend getting a sharpener. Helps a lot if your darts are getting a lot of use.
I got it. I got a sharpener also.
Other darts related things we discuss. Stance. Big debate about toes pointing forward versus perpendicular to the wall.
Forward 90 degree or 45 degree. You look at a lot of the top rated players in the world, like right now, MVG, Matt Van Gerwen. He's a 45 degreer.
Wow. Pre-throw routine, height/ wingspan advantages, and follow-through technique.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all I have. But to provide you some laughs, here's a link to a funny story about a darts championship where farting interfered with a darts competition.
I watched a YouTube video about this. It's Gary Anderson, if I remember correctly.
Best of luck with darts. Emily in Washington, D.C. with a wife, almost 2-year-old boy, and border collie mix.
Yep, Gary Anderson.
1,900 square feet. I think I've had 2 to 3 hot dogs in the past year.
Matthew Edgar was talking about how he farted at a competition recently. And what they do is at the earlier matches, it's a bunch of divided, think of like cubicles almost.
Okay.
With a board at each one where two players are playing each other and there's a referee there. And they have like 6 of them down the row. And on the other side, there's another 6.
Mm.
And he said that he farted and it was so bad that he cleared out like 4 boards.
What?
It's funny. The British press swooned over the Kalanick controversy, calling it Fartgate.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
That's so funny. Wesley Harms and Gary Anderson at the Grand Slam of Darts. That's so funny that I knew about that. Boy, I really do obsess with them. Learn everything I can.
All right.
All right, what do we got here? What's next?
We have an email from Helen. Hi, Matt, Dory, Henry, and Beau. The British enjoy a pub game. The darts and the snooker are on the BBC and are enjoyed by many people. It's probably because we like to see our sports people enjoy a pint and a cigarette as they play. Watch BDO matches from the 80s and 90s. They are available on the internet.
I've seen.
By the way, it's me. I'm the one who likes the podcast and the darts. I was a maths nerd growing up, and it's an excellent way to learn your times tables and subtraction. Can't play for shit, though. Also, the jelly cakes are mostly great on GBBO. Patisserie week will be fascinating. Stay safe, everyone, and have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we didn't say that, but yes. I think you did, Dora. You mentioned that last week, that the jelly cakes were pretty well done.
They were very impressive.
And patisserie week, oh my God. Some standards are all over the place. I'll say that. Let me say, if I could not have picked this 3.
No, me neither. In the beginning?
No.
No, I definitely would not.
One of them, yes.
Yes.
But the other two?
Same.
No.
No, definitely not. All right. This last email is from Laura. She wanted to let us know about Lug guitars.
Oh, it's for children.
You can tune it and actually play it. Comes with a deck illustrating chords. Our 2-year-old got one as a birthday gift this weekend, and it is pretty cool. Immediately thought of Matt and the kitty xylophone that was out of tune. They do not have lefties. They say you have to flip the strings.
Ugh. Well, what do you do about the nut?
I know.
Do you flip the nut too and the bridge? I mean, I got to do a whole setup on this thing. So fretting out the action doesn't seem very good. I mean, I suppose it is a child's guitar.
It's only 3 strings. I think the littlest ones are 3 strings.
I mean, I'd have to get the Pro 6. Oh, no, that's for children of over X amount of age. So 3 and up, you can get this little guy, which is a 3-stringer for $79. It's funny, is Brian Calhoun over at Rockbridge Guitars, he is building Henry an elephant guitar, a little tiny child guitar.
That's true.
It's taking so long because he's been building my guitar for about a year. These things take time.
All right.
I got to say, what a back end of the pod.
I mean, I thought you might enjoy that.
I did. If you would like more pods like this, you can do like listen to our Patreon episodes. They're all up there. If you want to join the Patreon and support the show, you can get up to 2 bonus episodes every month at patreon.com/excellentadventure. Big thanks to our Patreon supporters. If you support us at the $5 level or above, you get your name read on the podcast as a thank you each month. So head on over, check it out, get a ton more episodes, and
like a ton,
get thanked by us. So big ol' thank you. Paul Sharp.
Paula.
Penny from Massachusetts.
Robert Olson.
Robin Kilgo.
Sabrina Stern.
Sadie Massa.
Sarah Dauerman.
Sarah Prager.
Sarah Friedman.
Sarah Swift.
Sherry Olson.
SJV.
Tanya, how did she say her name is pronounced?
Kirchenman?
She sent it to us and now I forget.
Oh my God.
Sorry, Tanya. Tanya K.
Oh, the Holterman clan.
The Kembles.
Tracy Jury.
Will Fox.
Amanda Schramm.
Anonymous.
Anonymous. Anonymous in Brooklyn.
Ainsley.
Bradley Johnson.
Brian Guskey.
Cheryl Quick.
Christina.
Claire Dealey.
Clara Ploucha.
Crescent Martin.
Danielle Nusaforo.
Deanna McClain.
Eliza.
Elizabeth Kanami.
Freya.
And Gita Drury.
Thank you all. Thank you. So much.
What a wonderful week it's been. Everyone.
Yes.
We'll see you next week.
All right.
Disengage. That's what we say on the other podcast.
Bye.